where it did get scary is that I started working at a sports medicine facility and I was helping rehab patients. And then we were transitioning them into fitness training, and I helped build this practice. And then I realized I could open my own sports medicine facility because I built this practice myself for this guy. And I was like, I could do this myself. That's when it got scary, because it was like I maxed out every credit card. I sold everything I owned. I took on money from friends to start my own place. And holy shit, I was so scared. I mean, oh my God. I was like, if I blow this, I will have like ruined relationships, bankrupt myself. Like, just by 30 years old is when I kind of had it going. And that was terrifying beyond words. But I ended up pulling it off and then ended up on Biggest Loser.
That's how success happens. From Entrepreneur Magazine, my name is Robert Tuckman. I self-funded, built up, and eventually sold two businesses to major players in the sports and entertainment industry. And I am fascinated by other entrepreneurial minds and what drives high-achieving people. So on this podcast, we're going to learn what they've learned and what it takes to really succeed. These days, I'm sure we can all use a little motivation. It's been such an incredibly hard year for the entire world. So I thought there's no one better to interview for some much needed energy than Jillian Michaels. Jillian is someone who pulled herself up from nothing, becoming one of the top personal trainers, businesswomen, authors, and television personalities around. Of course, she's best known for her appearances on NBC's The Biggest Loser. But I learned very quickly that Jillian's story is so much more than Biggest Loser. It's really amazing as to what she has been able to build around her own brand and the battle she faced to get there. She's still battling every day by pursuing new dreams. It was so needed personally and so uplifting getting to sit down with Jillian. I wanted to start though by focusing on her own many struggles. She wasn't always the superstar motivator. In fact, I had seen recently that she'd posted a rare picture of herself as an overweight teenager. It was so not the Jillian Michaels I had imagined. It was so great to see it, and it made me hopeful to know that everyone has the ability to transform themselves and better their lives and turn themselves into incredible role models. I wanted to know if it was at that time as a teenager, or maybe shortly thereafter, when Jillian decided to really focus on health and wellness?
You know, so that's such a great question. I'm trying to find an easy way in that's like encapsulated about this long story. I was in martial arts. My mom got me into martial arts when I was like end of 12, early 13 years old. My parents were going through a really bad divorce. I was really struggling. I was overweight. I was gay, didn't know I was gay, but like all the other kids in school knew I was gay. So I was just really in a bad place, being bullied all the time. And she gets me into martial arts and it empowers me. Like I have friends at this karate studio who treat me well. I have mentors. I have people I respect. I have people who are in it with me, who are at the same belt rank as me, right? Like there's a community for me there. There's support. And it began to make me see how strong I was, how capable I was. And I believed in my martial arts instructor who believed in me. So I've often said to people, look, if you trust me, right? You bought my book or you came to my show or you're listening to whatever I'm saying, you must on some level believe I know what I'm talking about. Well, I believe in your ability to achieve this. And I don't just hope it for you. I don't just wish it for you. I know you can. Because I know the science and I know if applied to you and you want it bad enough, you'll achieve it. So if you believe in me and I believe in you, by virtue of that connection, you believe in you. And I got that from him. And over time, he began to say, and this is why I don't believe in sympathy. Right, I do believe in empathy. So he basically was like, I will not accept anything less than your best or you can leave. I don't have the time to believe in someone more than they believe in themselves. I'm not wasting my energy. I have a finite amount of energy and I'm going to put it where I can make the greatest impact. So either get your shit together and get on board or don't come back until you can. And that's so sympathy is like, oh, you poor, weak, sad, sorry thing. Just take the stairs. That's all you're capable of. And that's a very dangerous message of false lethargy. And it's like, hey, you're sad, pathetic, and weak. You can only handle the bare minimum. Whereas empathy is, yeah, it's not easy. I get it, but you're capable. And I won't co-sign anything less than your best. So do it. And that's really the turning point for me, is that somebody who I respected so much and admired so much and wanted to make proud, that connection forced me into seeing what I was actually capable of and believing in myself.
I love that, because I love how you talked about connection, because it seemed like you were going through such an incredibly difficult time. It just, it's so hard to just be a child without parents getting divorced or going through things that you feel shameful or hiding. Or, but for you, was it that first time you actually also felt confidence in yourself?
Oh God, I would say yes. I mean, I could look back at different things in my childhood, like when I was a little bit younger before I got chubby, and it was like, oh, I maybe jumped a horse over something that was a little bit higher than I thought, and I felt proud of it. But I mean, for the most part, yeah. And there was a very specific moment on my second degree blue belt test where I had to break these two boards with a sidekick. And for months, I was like, oh my God, I'm not going to be able to do the break. I was freaked out. Long story short, the moment of truth, and I broke the boards. And I remember thinking, holy crap, like if I could do this, and I didn't think I could, and I was worried about it for months, what else can I do that I've been writing off, that I didn't think I would be capable of? And it opens up this infinity of possibility where you shatter this prison of who you think you are and what you think you're capable of with one small achievement. And that's why success begets success. It changes your mindset and how you define yourself and what you believe you ultimately can achieve.
Yeah, I love that. And I love what you just said, you know, success begets success. And it's so true. And it seems like that was the first time you kind of felt that confidence. And how old were you at this time? And then from that point forward, was it, and I know I'm going to ask the question, and I know kind of the answer won't be what I'm asking, but like,
yeah.
Was it just easy street for you after that?
it's never been easy street, dude. Like, there's never been easy street.
I knew I shouldn't have asked that.
I mean, life is not easy street.
Life's hard.
If you're pushing yourself, there is no easy street.
Yeah.
And that is the reality. If you are constantly seeking to evolve and have more and be more and do more, you're not living on easy street. And that's a good thing, in my opinion. With that said, it definitely changed, and my ability to tolerate adversity and rejection and failure grew over time. So I'm far more comfortable not living on easy street than I used to be, but it's still not easy street, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it totally does, because I think just that's the big thing too, people pushing themselves and not being content in certain ways so you can grow. And obviously you've made a career and built incredible businesses based on that concept. So this helps you so much, the martial arts, you start growing. When was it that you thought, hey, I want to live my life and build a career within the wellness space?
I absolutely fell into it. At 17, I was at that point training for my black belt, and I was almost 18. I graduated high school early, not because I'm a genius, just because my birthday was on like a random date. So I was always the youngest in school. And I was at the gym. I had dropped out of college. I was, again, struggling because I also have hardcore ADD.
Yeah, yeah.
But I didn't know that I had it. I just couldn't, like, I could not, like, I think I just had a real hard time in college. Like, again, gay, didn't know I was gay, so didn't fit in. Struggled in certain classes and just couldn't retain certain information. So couldn't get past the 101s, you know, all the basic stuff that I wasn't passionate about. Still a lot of problems at home.
Yeah.
So my dad had thrown me out of the house, and I was living out of my car and training for my black belt and like doing pizza delivery and barbecue delivery. And like, sometimes I would stay on like a friend's couch, and I'm training for my black belt, and somebody sees me and thinks I'm a fitness trainer. And they're like, oh, you know, how much do you charge? And I was like, right at the time, I'm like, for what? Like,
what yeah, about? Exactly.
What are you talking about, dude? Right. Like, it's like, oh, you're a trainer, right? And I was like, oh yeah. I mean, I was like, how much does this pay? So, my mom actually, she was still talking to me, even though I was, you know, it was kind of on rocky ground with both my parents. She's like, I can tell you this, you definitely need some sort of credential to do it. And so my mom is very much like, if I believe in what you're doing, I'm going to help you. If I don't, right. you're on your own.
Right.
But because I dropped out of college, my parents were like, yeah, you're 100% on your own. So she's like, I'll pay for you to get this little certification. And she did. She paid for me to get my first certification. So I started training people and I was making like $15 an hour. And this
was geez. That's amazing. People were getting you for $15 an hour.
Well, I mean, it was, you know, a long time ago.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, you know, it was like cash money. So the IRS, don't come after me.
Like, yeah, I think it's been too long, right?
I don't believe I paid tax on some of that cash. I hope the statute is passed.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're
good. I was too irresponsible to have an accountant at the time. So anyway, I fell into it and I took it for granted for 7 years, actually for 10. So I, at 24, and you know, had a great business. I loved what I was doing. I was bartending at night to make extra cash. I was swimming in cash at that point. Like, I was making like $2,000 a week. I thought I was richer than God.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I was like, well, talk about easy street. And a friend of mine worked in the entertainment industry, and I started to get a lot of guilt about like, hey, you know, you need a real job. How are you going to make this, you know, a career? You know, you're getting older. So I ended up getting a job in the entertainment industry for 3 years. I've never been more miserable and never made less money. Make a long story short, at 27, I got fired from this entertainment company and I had to start working as a physical therapy aide, putting towels and ice packs on people and learning how to put people through corrective exercises. And my ego was super bruised because I was going to be a big Hollywood agent.
Sure.
And all of a sudden, it's like this terrible day for your ego is a great day for your soul, because I started waking up for the first time happy to go to work again. And then I was like, wait a minute. Like, I love this. I've always been great at this. I've done this for friends while I wasn't doing it as a career. How do I make a living out of this? And at 27, that's when I was like, this is my true calling. This is where I always should have been. Now what? And that's when I sort of committed to it as a way of life.
And then how did you start that business? Because I know for all entrepreneurs, especially entrepreneurs listening to this show, even entrepreneurs who've built big businesses, just kind of jumping off the diving board, did you feel the fear and anxiety going from a big talent agency that may have seemed much more stable, let's say? Was that difficult for you at first?
You know, the irony is that the more security you seek, the less you have. In that job, I never loved it. I was always at odds with the individuals that ran the agencies. I didn't like them. And, you know, they were not good people. They were Harvey Weinstein kind of guys. I'm not saying I was sexually harassed. I'm just saying they were scumbags.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
And I knew they were scumbags. I mean, like, and I didn't like it. And I made terrible money. And I was like, but it's like, well, this is what you do. This is the responsible thing to do. And, you know, I ended up getting fired because I finally called out some guy who was not a good dude. And it was like, he was a massive agent. And so it's like, I was never stable, even though I thought it was stable. I was never stable. So it was bad for my ego because at 27, I was like, oh my God, I don't have a, I was scraping up change out of my couch, right? Like people that I had worked, like that were assistants while I had become a junior agent were coming into where I was working, like for me to put ice packs on them and towels. And my ego was bruised.
It's so
when
hard.
When I got past that and I started getting phone calls from people that I'd been helping rehab from a car accident saying they felt their hip bone for the first time in 8 years because they'd lost so much weight, I was like, okay, wait, this is my truth. So while it wasn't scary for me because I didn't have a choice, I had to pay my bills. So my ego was bruised, but I wasn't afraid because I was like, oh my God, I got to figure this out. Now, where it did get scary is that I started working at a sports medicine facility and I was helping rehab patients. And then we were transitioning them into fitness training. And I helped build this practice. And then I realized I could open my own sports medicine facility because I built this practice myself for this guy. And I was like, I could do this myself. That's when it got scary because it was like, I maxed out every credit card. I sold everything I owned. I took on money from friends to start my own place. And holy shit, I was so scared. I mean, oh my God. I was like, if I blow this, I will have like ruined relationships, bankrupt myself. Like, just by 30 years old is when I kind of had it going. And that was terrifying beyond words. But I ended up pulling it off and then ended up on Biggest Loser.
It's amazing because when you talk about that and having similar experiences where you work for someone and all of a sudden you look around and you're like, wait a minute, I could be doing this for myself because you're doing everything. But even then taking that jump and maxing out credit cards, there's still that fear, you know, and anxiety. It seems like you were able to just keep moving forward.
There was a time where I literally describe it. So we were building, I have no idea even how, I had a business partner, who was also a trainer, and we found a penthouse on a building on Wilshire and La Cienega. So in Los Angeles, that's like prime real estate.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the owner of this building, I don't know what the guy was thinking. We had no credit. I don't know what. He literally was like giving us the space and we were building it out. And I kept delaying the build out and the opening of the business. And I realized it was because I was so scared that I was like, oh my God, once this is a go, we've got rent and we've got insurance and we've got this and we've got that. And I describe it as like circling the event horizon of a black hole. I was just like,
totally.
I thought it was going to swallow me. I was so terrified. And at some point I'm like, I don't have a choice, man. Like we got to go in. The date's up. The place is built out. It's on. Like do or die. And the reality is I've died a lot. I've lost a lot. I've failed a lot. This instance, I got lucky, didn't happen to be one of them. But when you do fail, like, is it actually going to kill you? Can you survive it and come out stronger? What lessons can you learn that will make you better prepared for the right person, opportunity, place, thing that's around the corner in life waiting for you to evolve enough to be ready for it?
Yeah,
but at the time, I was so scared.
I love that. You know, I have this quote I just keep on my desk. I always say it's a winner is just a loser who tried one more time.
And, yes.
I just, funny talking to you about that, but like, obviously, you
Spot
know
on.
That, but I love how, you know, even for you and people who know you now as this person who's got 100 million people following, which is crazy just to think that it's so baffling, but we'll get
it's
to that.
It's a reach thing. The 100 million is a reach across all platforms.
But
so like, for example,
amazing. That's
it's
incredible.
It's
humbling.
It doesn't mean they follow it though. So like, for example, we're auto installed. My app is auto installed on all Samsung TVs. So like you, they download it, but it doesn't mean they work out with you, which is pisses me off.
But you know, see now beating yourself up. It's like just that it's on there is incredible. But take me back. So you launched this business with a partner, and then how does Biggest Loser come about? But how does the business take off? You know, I know you're in LA. So was there like a Hollywood kind of thing, or like how did the business start to build, and when did you know, like, oh wow, like
sure.
I'm doing well at this. This is cool.
Well, the thing of it is, I had done the homework for years because I worked at a sports medicine facility.
Right.
So I'd already built the clientele that was loyal to me. I had already learned the entire industry. And I learned all the great physical therapists and chiropractors and massage therapists and physiatrists. So in truth, I was extremely, extremely prepared. I knew every aspect of the business inside and out. So when we did finally open the doors, I brought my clientele with me.
Yeah.
I had all my experts and my doctors and my therapists in place. So I owned the facility, even though I worked under their supervision.
Right.
Like I had done the work on it. So I was very well prepared. And then ironically, my time at the talent agency, you know, you think to yourself, I wasted 3 years of my
yeah.
life. But here's the thing. All those connections allowed me to build the sports medicine facility.
Yeah.
And then one of those agents that was working out with me was like, hey, you know, I heard about this job on NBC. And I was like, Because at the time,
yeah.
you know, the shows were like The Swan. They were
yeah.
making fun of people.
Yeah,
and I
totally.
Was like, I don't know, dude, The Biggest Loser.
Right, right, right.
And I hated reality TV. And the game was celebrity clients. It was like Gunnar Peterson and Harley Pasternak train this celebrity, this celebrity, this celebrity, and they're written up in Us Weekly and People. Like that was how you built a fitness brand. It wasn't off of reality TV. It was the opposite.
Right.
So he convinces me and he's like, just go in on the interview. He's like, it's NBC, it's primetime TV. Like just go take the interview. It's up to you. You know, you probably won't even get it. I was like, you're probably right. So I end up getting it. And long story short, I take the job, but not without so much. Like my favorite quote with regard to Biggest Loser is Latin. It's like, I don't remember it in Latin, but the translation is that which nourishes me also destroys me. Like it gave
wow.
me a huge platform,
yeah. Yeah.
but it also pigeonholed me in a lot of ways. I was constantly fighting with the producers. Like, so I'm super grateful, but oh my God, it was a, why?
It definitely came with its downside.
Well, first, when you got this, was there a fear? Like, you know, oh my God, this is going to be, you know, I guess you didn't know major show, but like, this is going to be on a major network. And was there any fear putting yourself out there, or did you kind of, were you confident in yourself at that point?
That I wasn't afraid of. And here's why, because I'll never forget season one. I had a huge fight with one of the producers on set because they used to, in previous incarnations of the show, they used to put out what they call temptations, right? Where they would leave out a bunch of food and try to get the contestants to eat it. And like, I was so pissed. It was just totally counterintuitive to everything that I was doing. And that show was never intended to have people like lose 100 pounds when they started it. They were like, well, we're going to humiliate fat people. And then, you know, myself and Bob, who was the other trainer on the show, did what we did. The contestants ended up losing a ton of weight. And they were like, wait a minute, maybe we have this inspirational brand. But that was not the intention.
Right.
So season one, they're leaving in all this crap and we're shooting the show. And I literally like spit in all the temptations, flipped them over, threw them out. Mind you, I was like 31 at the time.
You know, you can't believe it, right?
I was a little more intense. I probably would have handled it differently. And I remember the producer, you know, being like, you're never going to work again. And I was like, what are you going to do, bro? You're going to call all the soccer moms in LA? Fucking man. And it like, I mean, what were they going to do? Like, what
I love though that you said that, because there's so many people who would get this success and like be like, I'll do anything they say and not be true to themselves.
No, I was the opposite, unfortunately.
And it worked, which is great. Like, you stayed true to yourself.
I did. But it definitely cost me in a lot of ways, because I, you know, it was like, okay, well, she's going to be Darth Vader. Right. And that was always tough, because I couldn't get, breaking from that Biggest Loser persona was hard professionally. Whereas, yes, people who saw through it and who said like, I like the way she trains. I want to work out with her. I'm going to buy her book. I believe that she knows what she's doing. And that's wonderful. But there were certain jobs I wanted along the way that I didn't get because of the Biggest Loser persona, or because it was like, oh, she's so difficult. She doesn't just play ball. Whereas Bob was like, yeah, whatever you want. I was like, you know,
right,
no.
Right.
So, you know, it is what it is, man. You make decisions. Would I have handled things more diplomatically and more maturely? Of course. I'm older now. But hindsight's 20/20. And I don't regret, you know, what I don't agree with, I don't agree with.
Yeah.
And there's a reason I was often on that show so many times.
Yeah. You came back. I know it, look, in any case, what I think it did, and just from launching and people knowing about you into what you've become today, you know, in that respect, it sounds like, again, you were true to yourself and all this success happened. But going from Biggest Loser, what was your, you know, because you're on a show and of course, I'm sure people want to train with you, but you've built this incredible wellness business that includes best-selling books, your fitness app. I mean, just tons of other things that I want to get into. But how did you make that first step, like from Biggest Loser to like building out your brand a little bit bigger and building businesses?
Well, I had wanted to build out the gym as a brand originally. So I had thought, oh, this is going to allow me to build out my gym. And like, because at the time Curves was a huge thing. This was a while ago.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's going to be the brand. So I had always tried to figure out how I was going to brand myself, because when I started thinking, all right, if I'm going to be a trainer and I commit to that at 27 years old, and this is what I'm meant to do, how am I going to build a real business out of this so I'm not constantly working hand to mouth, hour to hour, client to client? So my head was already thinking about those things. So I thought, all right, I'm going to open my own sports medicine facility. Great. I'm going to brand this facility. Okay, great. And then on Biggest Loser, I realized, wait a sec, that's not going to be a thing. It's going to be the Jillian Michaels brand is going to be a thing. So how do I then use the Biggest Loser platform? And they had zero interest in the Jillian Michaels brand because they didn't own the Jillian Michaels brand. So they were like, wait a second, this trainer is getting bigger than the Biggest Loser brand. We want them to buy the Biggest Loser DVD and the Biggest Loser book. But that didn't exist. There was no Biggest Loser diet. There was me and the other trainer. Yeah. So that was another massive point of huge contention, because they were like, no, you do our stuff. And I was like, no, I do mine. So I had a licensing agent who was really talented guy. This is back in like 2006. And I said, I'm looking at like the Rachel Rays and the Susie Ormans, right? And the Martha Stewarts, and they're synonymous with home, wellness, money. How do I become that name synonymous with fitness? And we ended up becoming business partners, because I know what I know, right? And I do what I do really well. I also know what I don't know.
Yeah.
And I don't have any ego about that. So I want the people who know what I don't know. And I began recruiting people that understood branding and licensing and educating myself about that. and building a team of people that knew what I didn't know. And I wasn't greedy. I was like, I'll go 50-50 with you. I would rather have 50% of something than 100% of nothing.
Yeah, I love it.
Because, you know, pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered.
Yeah.
And we're still business partners to this day.
That's so great. And you just brought up an incredible point where a lot of entrepreneurs and going out, you can be in a situation where you're trying to bring in talent, but you want, you know, it's so important to bring in people who are, let's say, smarter than you in certain areas, and then entrust them. It seems like you've probably been very good at that. I can see from being, you know, a trainer and fitness, like you're always encouraging, probably coaching. So did that play into your business style as well when you start to manage employees?
So that's definitely tough. I have to be real careful about that because I am an extreme, and I accept this about myself. And I know it's a rough quality. I'm an extreme perfectionist.
It's hard.
And the time that you will see me be a bitch, because for the most part, I'm actually not a bitch.
Yeah.
But when I am, and I'll be dead honest with you, is when I think people are half-assing their job. And I don't care if it's somebody who cooks you a steak at a restaurant. I don't care if it's a valet guy who takes my car. I don't care if it's somebody who works with me. Like, to me, I don't care what job you're doing. You do that job with pride and you do the best you can. And when people phone in their job, it bothers me. I don't respect it. And it's, I've always worked extremely hard. And so if I see somebody in my company who, like, I will answer your email within 24 hours, no matter what. I don't care if I'm on vacation. Yeah. So I'm like, no, there is no vacation. Like, yes, you're on vacation, but that's not the world. This is America. There's 340 million of us. If you want to get ahead and that's your priority, you check your emails, you answer within 24 hours. There isn't, I'm on vacation. What are the hours? Like, that's just not the industry. And even though I know that, okay, well, now you're going to get sued if you have that mentality, it's, I let my business partner manage the employees, and I don't manage them. I simply, like, when they work hard for me, I make sure they know how much I appreciate it. And we go out of our way to give them bonuses and say thank you. And I try to be super respectful of their time. So, like, even on the weekend, I'll say, this can wait till Monday. I just need to get this off my plate now because I have so much work. But it is tough because the way I work is like, no, man, it's a job.
Yeah.
You're always on. And no one is like that.
No, it's so hard as an entrepreneur and someone who's had successful businesses like yourself and people like, I'm the same way. If I see people half-assing their job, I know they could do better. It drives me nuts.
And crazy.
It's like I'm the same, like I'll respond within that email exactly like you, just the same. And like, it is true. I'm the hardest on myself, but it plays out. And that's what you want. Like when you're building a company, you're paying people. And that's been one of my hardest things to kind of counterbalance, but it seems like you've worked that out pretty well.
I try.
Yeah.
But even in the world, you know, people complain about bad service. I purposely go out of the way to call the manager over when someone's amazing. And I'm like, just so you know, that employee is amazing. You're extremely lucky to have them. I hope you appreciate them. I would kill for an employee like that. Whether it's like somebody who helps me at my bank or like a valet guy that I give 20 bucks for parking my car because he's like so polite and so careful with the car and so lovely. And I'm like, wow, you're so lucky to have that guy parking cars for you. What an amazing guy. And then I'm very intense about that stuff. It's bad because I'm bad that way.
Because you care, and that's what probably has added to your success and holding people accountable as well, because there's people who do businesses and they don't. And I think there's a time and place like to do that. And obviously it sucks sometimes if you're so hard on yourself and you beat yourself up because someone's not doing their job and then you're only miserable. That's got to be hard.
More from our guest. But first, a word from our sponsors. Ready to start your own business, but don't know where to start? Well, the dark days are over. Entrepreneur has just released a new online course that walks you through the entire process of starting your own business, from testing out your idea to getting funding to get your business off the ground. And here's the best part. If you go to entrepreneur.com/SYOB, you can take the first three lessons for free. You immediately get access to videos, worksheets, and quizzes. And at the end, you'll get a personalized one-page business brief on your idea that you can share with investors, partners, family members, and friends for feedback. And seriously, it's free. Check it out at entrepreneur.com/SYOB.
And we're back. for you in the business, and you start this partnership, you start the licensing business. Was that really the first business after the fitness studios and does it take off, or how'd you guys go about it?
So our industry has evolved. The world has evolved, yeah, obviously, in the last 15 years so dramatically. We've watched entire industries collapse, publishing collapse. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, exactly.
I can come out with a book now and, you know, maybe 100, 200,000 people will buy it. It used to be 1 million.
Yeah.
But if I put up the same video on YouTube, I'll have 200,000 views in a week.
Yeah.
Because that's just, people are like, hey, I don't pay for things. It's free now. This information is free. So then you've got to learn how to evolve, right? In the beginning, yeah, it was all about licensing. So it was, okay, K-Swiss is, you know, wants to do a Jillian line of clothing. So we're going to license Jill's name and Jill's going to work on designing the fitness clothes or this line of shoes, or we're going to put Jillian's name on our Monster headphones and we're going to license her name and she's going to design the headphones. And that was the business. And it was a great business. And then all of that started to collapse, yeah, as social media began to evolve and everything was vertical businesses. So that was a really tough shift for us because we licensed my name to a website, JillianMichaels.com. And it wasn't even us, actually. It was an agent who did the deal for 10 years. So yeah, while apps were just beginning, we didn't own the rights to my name and digital. So we couldn't even start our own app. So it was like, yeah, we were behind the eight ball with that. Yeah. So that was the initial business and it worked really well until it didn't. And that's when we were like, all right, we've got to now build and finance these projects of our own. And it was a really, you want to talk about failures? Holy mother of God. We had like, we had one called Active Connection,
yeah,
that it was this app where people could, and then all of a sudden there was meetup.com.
Yeah.
We,
yeah,
put $250,000 in developing, wow, this thing.
Yeah.
We were just,
yeah,
about to go do a raise and meetup.com like came out, and it just so much of that stuff where we have to constantly like learn, evolve, grow. So we shifted from that business into the vertical business, and we're just now, after I'd say at least 5 years of being in that world, starting to get significant traction. But holy mother of God, it took a long time.
I love that though, because even yourself and your brand and your name, what I love is that you started something, put a lot of money into it, it didn't work, but you pivoted. Like, because most people think once you achieve success, everything else is super, super easy. Any business, uh-huh, you touch. So,
yeah, there's a graveyard of dead businesses that we failed at, literally.
And I love that. Like I said, like for people to hear that, especially would-be entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs on the show, like it's getting yourself back up off the mat. And like you've been able to do that literally and figuratively, I'm sure, for years. But for you, I'm really curious, like you said, you started this and your brand, and then all of a sudden, Instagram comes out, and then there's thousands and thousands of what you call influencers. What's your just take on the whole revolution now? What's happening too without boutique fitness or being able to go into places to train? Like, what's your take just on the industry and what's going on?
Well, here's what's funny: you've now seen all the influencers for the most part. There's so many, and they've tried to transition one medium to another medium and it doesn't work. So you've got, you know, now it's like not trendy to, like, influencer is now cheesy. It's right, not trendy now, even though, by the way, there are some fabulous talents on Instagram and fitness that I happen to follow and think are wonderful. And I'm now trying to figure out how to include on my app.
Sure.
I'm like, I actually think now we need to branch out and bring in fresh young faces and build sort of a collective of brilliant minds in the fitness industry.
Yep.
However, it's no longer on trend where it was like, everybody needed a following. And then it was like, wait, these followings might be fake. Wait, the engagement might,
right,
be bought. Wait, it's not translating to this business or this post or this medium of media, be it a book that didn't sell, or, you know, there's this one fitness influencer and she released a book, bombed. And yeah, it's like, yeah, didn't work, right? So now it's like, all right, wait a second. It's not translating. Or, you know, you've got all these boutique fitness gyms that are extremely expensive. So they're hard for the masses. So then they get completely disrupted with ClassPass, right? Then, yeah, that's, yeah, a problem for them. And then Corona comes along and that's a problem for them.
Right.
And so the one good thing about me is that I've weathered every storm. So when T-Mobile is like, okay, we can't do the kind of promotions we usually do because of Corona, let's do a Jillian Michaels app promotion. It's Jillian Michaels. or Samsung is like, okay, we're going to install fitness apps. We're going to do 3 Jillian Michaels because she's proven decade after decade after decade, although it's only been 2 decades. I don't want to make myself that old.
Yeah, I don't.
Let's say I did start at 17. Me. Take it easy. But I mean, so you weather the trends even when you're not cool, right? It's like there was such a long time where it was like, oh, she's not cool anymore. Yeah. This influencer's way cooler than her. And yet then a trend comes out and I say something about keto and it makes worldwide news, whereas that other person can put something up and it doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
So it's, you got to weather the trends, man. Like there's, now all of a sudden Jillian Michaels is cool again because she's weathered every storm. So yeah, she goes on Samsung. Or Amazon goes to have another conversation about how do we incorporate Alexa into fitness? Let's talk to Jillian Michaels. So you start becoming cool again. Everything is cyclical. And you've got to remember that and just stay consistent and weather the storm. The one thing that drives me nuts is when you see people in a business that don't belong in a business. And you see tech owning fitness.
Yeah.
And that makes me crazy. I'm like, you don't deserve it. You're not fitness people. But they have so much money that it's like dunking against LeBron when the things they put out are complete crap or
just
totally
not authentic.
Like the Theranos thing. Tell me you've seen that.
Oh God.
Where the woman who wasn't, she wasn't a doctor.
It's the craziest story.
She wasn't an engineer. And she single-handedly is going to revolutionize medicine and blood draws and lab work with something that's a total fraud. Hey,
that is a crazy story and what she did. And,
and
the people who bought onto it. And I guess, you know, you come with the Stanford grad and pedigree and, you know, it's just, it's so baffling.
Total fraud.
But you
and I see that with fitness, that kind of thing, that does bother me. And I'm like, you don't belong in this space because what you're putting out is junk. But my business partner always tells me, he's like, Jill, you got to work with Silicon Valley. So it's like, all right, how do we, so there's something that we're working on where we're now taking a project to Silicon Valley to say like, hey, we believe this is the right way forward in fitness.
Yeah.
And these are the faces and these are the names and this is the platform and this is the medium. But it's like, you gotta roll with the trends. You gotta work with the trends. And I have to remind myself of that constantly.
Yeah. And how does that affect you personally? Like, does it mentally or just yourself? If, like you said, oh, I'm not cool at this point, aside from the fact that you've stayed in it and are, and like you said, have been doing well now, but like when you're not, does that even affect you? Like someone with your success, like, does that like, hey, I want, like, are you still pushing yourself? Like, I've got to prove myself.
Constantly. And, you know, I really had a hard time with social media in the beginning because honestly, I don't like it.
And,
I don't want to see my friends out to dinner when I'm not there. You know, like, I just don't like it.
Hard.
Like, I don't want to get preached at about politics.
Yeah,
I don't like to see nasty comments. I don't like social media. So it was really hard for me to embrace the medium. And I embraced it very late in the game, which cost me a lot. Now I've learned to sort of say like, okay, you know, I'm only going to follow very few people. I've blocked out comments from people that don't follow me so that I don't have to see or engage in the nonsense. I can be there for the people who do follow me and I can answer their questions in the comments or respond to them. And I found a way to use it in a positive way. But, you know, again, it's like, you got to evolve and
yeah.
And find the good in things and push yourself. So I was really uncomfortable about it. I didn't like it. I didn't want to do it. And I was very uncool because I didn't have the biggest following.
Right.
And, you know, and I had to accept that and not fight it and like embrace the medium. And I have in a way that works for me.
Yeah. Which is most important. But now you see, like you said, it's so funny how it doesn't translate over to other successes, which you've been able to maintain and even increase over a number of years, which in your business and fitness, wellness is to stay relevant for that long of a time is pretty incredible. And I know you don't have much time, but I wanted to just ask you a couple quick other things. So where do you see the wellness industry? I mean, it's a $4.5 trillion industry now. And where do you see it going with this pandemic and the people now, you know, streaming fitness, you know, like, do you think it goes back to normal, people going to gyms, or what's your overall feeling just on the industry?
I went to my gym the other day. And again, it's tough to know because state to state, country to country, it's very different. My business partner happens to be an investor in Barry's Bootcamp. I'm not. And he said they had to just take on $100 million because of everything that's going on. And this is like a $1 billion business.
Sure.
I mean, I went to Bay Club where I work out and I literally was like, oh my God, I'm the only one here.
Oh yeah.
And again, it might be different elsewhere, but all the protocols of like make a reservation, wear your mask, walk in a circle, put this on the machine, only one machine at a time. I think people are like, I can't deal with it. And they kind of, it's definitely, definitely harming the industry. So we're seeing a trend back to apps and indoor, outdoor, but like at home workouts. So we added meditations to my app and we're adding outdoor workouts to my app because we're trying to constantly accommodate, evolve and grow. But I don't see this industry recovering for a long time. I would say a good year because we're not getting out of this for a while.
Yeah.
There's no shot, man. They got to test this vaccine.
Yeah.
If they have it, and it's got to be A, safe, and B, it's got to work for at least 6 months.
Yeah.
This thing is not ending until well into 2021 in my humble opinion, based on the fact that I work with a lot of different doctors who are like, "Hey, I'm telling you, get comfortable." You know, and it's so
I'm laughing, but that's hard. It's so hard.
Yeah, I just don't.
You're right.
I mean, I don't see this being. I see a lot of digital, a lot of streaming, a lot of apps, a lot of at home, a lot of outdoors. This is like Strava app for your outdoor run. A lot of people buying bicycles.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, totally. I just got off the Peloton. I never do Peloton. And it's like, now doing, my trainer I do on basically FaceTime. And it's just, it's such a weird world. I mean, I miss connection and community, but like, you're right. I think a lot of people are going in that direction. And with your app now, can you just, before we end, just speak a little bit more about like the services? And it sounds like you're increasing maybe some stuff, like you were saying, going to Silicon Valley. Like, what is this your main focus now? Aside from like the 8 books you have and all the other stuff you've done, but is this where you're focusing a lot of your time?
The app really is the all-in platform. And the reason I say that is because, I mean, we're omnipresent, right? It's installed on Samsung. You're going to be able to access audio stuff on Alexa. You can stream it from your phone, your tablet. It's even going to work now with the new Apple update. You're going to be able to play it on your laptop. I mean, it's omnipresent. And I can put anything I want up there. You want recipes? I'll have it up there tomorrow. You want a kettlebell workout? Great. We just shot it. It's going up in a couple of months. Like it. You want audio stuff? Great. That's going up. Oh, you want anything that the consumer wants? There are no, let me put out a new DVD. It exists in the app.
Yeah.
So any information you want is accessible on any device and can be updated or added at any time to this medium. So now we're looking at it going, all right, we've proven this model. We've improved our LTV, the lifetime value of the customer, 80% over the last 2 years. Like we've got really strong metrics to show like our engine works. The dynamic, the way the app works is very unique in that, yes, there's follow-along content. So you've got all my old DVDs and new follow-along workouts in there. You've got audio workouts that are being added, but there's also dynamic workouts. So I've shot over 1,000 different exercises.
Wow.
And you can say, I want a yoga workout, I want a kickboxing workout. That's all in there for you. But you have the ability to show up and say, Jillian, I want a total body workout. I'm a beginner athlete. I have the following equipment. I'm available for 20 minutes. And in that moment, a dynamic workout is created just for you. So nobody has that tech that we have. So we even have an advanced meal planner that allows you to say, I'm allergic to this. I hate that. I love these things. I want to lose weight. I don't eat, you know, whatever. Yeah. I'm cooking for 10. I'm cooking for one. And your meal plan is customized. So our goal now is to take a handful of really talented people and start building them out on the platform.
That's great. Then
actually build out this platform sort of in the way that Squarespace has built a template for workouts and own that platform, use my app as an example of what the platform can do and get people to invest in that platform and own the platform. So that's kind of how we're looking at the industry right now, because that's where everything is going.
Yeah, I love it. I think you're obviously, you know, like you've said, you've had successes, failures, but like to me,
so many of both,
which is always so good to hear from someone who's been as successful as yourself, because people, again, a lot of times they don't realize like, and it's nice that you're honest and open about that. And I really appreciate it. And I do think with what you're doing now with the app and where fitness is going and wellness, that's a fantastic idea. And if there's someone who's going to pull it off, it's going to be you. So I really appreciate you coming on and talking to us, and can't wait to see this app explode.
Oh, you're so kind. I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jillian.
And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to How Success Happens wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Wednesday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And if you like to share, please feel free to pass along the show to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost, and I could always use the subscribers. And do you have ideas for guests? I always love to hear about great entrepreneurs. If you know anyone, shoot me an email at hsh@entrepreneur.com or on Twitter at Robert Tuchman, that's RobertTuchman, or even send me a message on LinkedIn. How Success Happens is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for insight on building your business, or even better yet, subscribe to our magazine. No joke, I found my first job after reading about a company in Entrepreneur Magazine back in the 1990s. It's always been my absolute favorite magazine for entrepreneurs. Thanks for listening and spending some time with me today. Until next time, my name is Robert Tuchman, just a fellow entrepreneur and your host. See you soon.